Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, here to talk positional reviews tonight. And tonight, the outside linebacker position for the 2021 Ravens. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll look forward to 2022 as well. Joining me for the show, Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Ken.
Always a great friend of the show, and you do the Situation Room with Jordan Coe. Great show, also on filmstudybaltimore.com. Highly recommend it. Where can people talk football with you online?
The best and most easy way to find me is on Twitter, at Gabe Fergie. Love talking football, Ravens football, any football really, any NFL, even college. Big fan of all of it. So if you have any opinions or thoughts, I'd like to chat with you, and you know, I'll put my thoughts out there on Twitter. Agree, disagree. I'll have a good conversation about it.
All right, highly recommended follow. So the Ravens' outside linebacker position obviously came into this year as one of the really big question marks with the loss of Matthew Judon. Who else?
Yannick Ngakoue.
Matthew Judon was a big one. Yeah, Yannick Ngakoue, of course. How could we forget? the Ravens ended up with a pretty damn good trio of pass rushers. It was very effective during the season. They lacked a little bit at the Sam spot. We'll talk a little bit about that. But let's kind of, at an overarching level, do you have any thoughts you kind of want us to be mulling as we go through the player discussion?
So I think one of the things that was interesting was the rotation was much slimmer this year than what we've seen in recent seasons. And how they were utilized was also a bit different than in past seasons. It's more of a true edge rotation where you had basically three guys who are rotating between Houston, OA, and Bowser. And really, Bowser had a really unique season in the way he was utilized this year, which we can dive into a little bit more in depth, I think, because it's interesting. That's pretty much it. The other two guys, McPhee and Ferguson, they really didn't get very many snaps. And when they were on the field, they weren't that effective. And that's probably why they weren't on the field as much as they have been in years past.
Right. Various bouts with injuries and COVID for those players as well. So that was a problem. The big three played together on a lot of downs together. OA, Houston, and Bowser played together on a lot of downs together. And they were one of the really effective groups in the NFL in terms of being on the field on third down. And as bad as the Ravens defense was in some ways in terms of you know, allowing a lot of passing yards, passing touchdowns, they're very effective at getting off the field on third down. So.
Yeah, that was one of the defense's strengths for sure, stopping the third down. I think that a lot of the time it was partially due to their run defense, setting them up in good down distances. So there were a lot of third and longs. And oftentimes in third and shorts, the run defense was what got them off the field too. And, you know, the outside linebackers were a big part of that. It wasn't just, you know, the guys with the middle. I thought, you know, Justin Houston had a great year playing outside linebacker and run defense. It wasn't necessarily his calling card coming into the season, but he impressed me a lot. And, you know, and Bowser and OA, they had their ups and downs, but pretty solid all around for that group, I would say.
Right. I would agree. I mean, I thought Justin Houston had a fine year and you know, a good run defender. I wouldn't go out the window in terms of how good he was. He's a pass rusher primarily, and he's constantly among the pressure leaders on a per game basis. A little trouble finishing his pressures this year. So we're going to start with Justin Houston, talk a little bit about him.
Yeah. I mean, you said at the beginning of the pod how we were kind of having a big question mark in the offseason. What was the outside linebacker position going to look like? There was talk about Houston pretty early on. Obviously, he signed later. I thought he was an outstanding addition. I thought he came in and gave the Ravens exactly what they needed at the outside linebacker position. Solid in all phases, I think. He didn't really drop into coverage very much. But as a pass rusher, as a run defender, I think he was very consistent. And he really gave that veteran presence, that kind of consistent pressure that you count on game in and game out. And that was something I think the Ravens definitely needed this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And he ended up playing over 500 snaps for the Ravens, which I think probably was a little bit unexpected. And I would have expected maybe 25 snaps a game, something like that, that he'd play 40-something%. But, you know, he played roughly half the snaps for the defense in the entire year. Actually, I think it was a little bit more than half. Yeah, five for 543 out of 1031, and that takes out penalties. So, you know, that's definitely a very significant contribution from a player his age. Definitely provided pressure. He provided more pressure than sacks and quarterback hits, obviously. That is something the Ravens really need to be concerned about. I know that there's a ongoing debate of whether pressure, because it's replicatable, is what you really want, or that you really want to finish with sacks, or even some people that you know, hitting the quarterback should have an elevated importance because every time you knock the quarterback down is good, which I certainly agree with. He was a guy who forced the quarterback off the spot a fair amount this season, but he didn't finish too often. I actually don't have his sack total here, but I will get that while we're looking.
I think I looked it up. It was 4.5, which felt about right. And I think that you're absolutely right. It wasn't just Houston. I feel like the Ravens in general were really poor at finishing sacks this year. And Houston was a big part of that. I think they probably as a team left maybe half a dozen to maybe even more than that on the field. Quarterback in the grasp, couldn't quite bring him down. And several of those times, it led to, an incompletion or, third down stop. But a lot, sometimes they were able to get away and get a completion too. So that's definitely why the pressure isn't always as good as a sack, because, if you don't get the sack to finish the negative play, then there's always a chance that the quarterback can make something out of it.
Yeah, and I, with the Ravens secondary being what it was, the difference between a 2.5 second pressure and a 3 second pressure really matters in terms of the different ways I score it differently than PFF does. So I always usually bring up that measure, but you need to get there faster and you need to get the quarterback more downer. Both those things to maximize the value of that thing. And obviously the Ravens with Seymour in the back end. By the way, he just got re-signed today. I don't know if you caught that.
I did see that.
Wow.
He wasn't great. He's a body that, and the Ravens, I think they feel like they need as many bodies as possible. So it's a position that has been decimated by injuries many seasons for the Ravens. And I think just having somebody that they can have maybe as like a training camp body at this point, but you never know.
Yeah, I wouldn't think his chance to make the starting 53 is particularly good. And if he did, I think it would be a very bad sign for what the Ravens do this offseason, is that they would have lost all the players that they really wanted to keep, not drafted well. A lot of things could go wrong to get you that spot, but I don't know how things could go particularly right. Decent chance he ends up on the practice squad next year.
Yeah, I don't know what his eligibility would be in terms of because you couldn't sign into a reserve future deal because he was on the active roster for most of this, or at least half the season. So if you wanted to have him as like somebody that you'd be bringing back to at least evaluate, you need to sign him, which I think at this point doesn't really hurt them any. So
And they've got six veterans they can have on the roster, and I think Seymour is getting to the point where he's one of those, if he isn't there already. But they have to count him as one of the ones they have. Anyway, let's get back to the outside linebackers. So Justin Houston, where do you see him for the Ravens in 2022?
I think it has to be the similar kind of deal as what they had this year. I would definitely be willing to bring him back. Like I said, I thought he played well for them. I think, the veteran leadership is something that the Ravens can use. We'll probably talk a little bit about Parnell McPhee. I'm not sure if he comes back. He just didn't seem to have much in the tank. The injuries caught up with him this year. So I think having someone like Houston brought back makes a lot of sense. 400, 500 snaps. I think you could probably lean more into him as a pass rusher than he was this year. Although, I do think he played pretty well as a run defender. But I think it just depends on the money. If he can come back, 4 or 5 million, I think it's a reasonable contract for someone at his stage in his career. I would be totally on board doing that.
I think that's too high, honestly, in my view. I think you pay him with incentives that much, but you start it at 2 million, and with an opportunity to make up to 5 if he hits a certain threshold of maybe snaps played, maybe sacks, maybe a lot of things. But I think there's so many positive things about him. He's been an Iron Man for most of his career. In terms of percentage of snaps played when he's in the game, but when he's not there for some games sometimes. Now, the funny thing about it is that Justin Houston has played all but two games the last three seasons. He missed two this year. All right. But before that, you know, he played 12, 15, 5, 11, another 11 and two 16s in years one and three. He's been a guy who had not been that durable, and it's all of a sudden later in his career become a very durable player.
Yeah. And the two games he missed this year, I think, were due to COVID, right? It wasn't an injury. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's, you know, being more on a rotation as he gets later on in his career. He was someone who logged a lot of snaps earlier on. Maybe that's, you know, helped preserve his body a little bit. But to me, he looked fresh. Like, he didn't look like he was wearing down at the end of the season. That happens sometimes, especially older players, sometimes rookies. I think that wasn't the case for him. I think, you know, he still had, you know, juice all the way through the whole 18-week schedule.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I would like the Ravens offseason strategy to focus around getting him. The Ravens really need, though, now seems to be a Sam linebacker. And obviously, Tyus Bowser was the guy and played a lot of snaps down the stretch in terms of a very high percentage of the total Ravens snaps. But they don't really have an obvious Sam yet, but they have two guys they want to think can play the position now on the team. So they might not draft another, even though Tyus Bowser may well miss time to begin 2022. So they have Hayes will be coming back off injuries, Dalen Hayes, and they drafted really to be a Sam linebacker. And we thought he'd go into this season and be the backup Sam, a guy who would kind of naturally drop into coverage.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really get to see much of Hayes this year. I think that he definitely has that profile coming out of college. He has, you know, decent athleticism. He's not like a Tyus Bowser or an OA level athlete. Mm-hmm. But he can move in space a little bit. I think he's solid against the run. I thought he was a little bit better as a pass rusher when we saw him in the preseason than what I was expecting based off his college tape. So if he can develop some more as a pass rusher, he could end up being a very quality player for the Ravens. Frankly, it's just too early to say. I think you hope that he'll have a larger role next year. But you know, you can't count on anything until you actually know what he's going to look like on the field.
Right. If he doesn't play, you know, close to 50% of the snaps next year, if assuming Bowser's injury plays out the way we fear it may, then I'm afraid that it may mean the Ravens drafted somebody else, or it may mean he got hurt, in which case, oh boy. You know, it starts to get really tough. Now, Jake's, you know, Adafioway, a great player and certainly had a fine rookie year. He profiles to play pretty much anywhere you want to use him because his athleticism is off the charts. I don't really love the idea of forcing him to play Sam linebacker early in his career. I think it would be better if he could develop as a pass rusher before he's forced into that. But I think he could be a hell of a Sam linebacker
too. Yeah, he definitely has the athletic traits that you would want. You know, he has the ability to drop into coverage. He wasn't asked to do that very much as a rookie. It could be something that he's more cross-trained to do in a second year, especially depending on Bowser's health. But, you know, I think we saw a lot of flashes out of OA. I think he might have, if he didn't lead the Ravens in pressures, he led the outside linebacker position group in pressures. And that was despite missing a couple of games at the end of the season. I think he also kind of tailed off a little bit in the second half. I think he might have hit that rookie wall a little bit. There's a few games, a stretch where he just didn't do much. And that might have been scheme. It might have been who he was going up against as well. But I think the upside with him is still very high. I mean, you have rare athletic traits in terms of speed. He can do the power rush at times as well. Playmaker, I think that's what he is, and that's what he will continue to develop into, especially as he can learn to, you know, learn the technical aspect of the position a little bit more than what he has right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely, from what we saw at Penn State as a senior to where he was in this first year, I think he overplayed what he was projected to be. In fact, I think if he had redrafted the first round, knowing what this season went out like, I think he'd go much higher in that first round. I don't know exactly where, but much higher. He's an exciting player. He certainly is. He's the kind of guy you're going to see from Peter King as his dark horse defensive player of the year next year. This year it was Matabike.
Yeah, I remember.
But it'll be a formulaic pick again, and Oweh would be an excellent formulaic pick for a guy who had a pretty good rookie year. All three of those guys, remarkably, very close in terms of all sorts of pressure events this year. Houston, Oweh, and Bowser really all provided real pass rush value. Bowser was the most effective pass rusher, in my opinion, because he dropped the coverage.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I was looking at his snaps and whether he was dropping into coverage. And these are just snaps available from Pro Football Focus. But his splits between run defense, coverage, and pass rush are pretty even. He has the most pass rush out of his snaps, but I think it was something like 300 some pass rush snaps and over 200 coverage snaps. And that's a pretty rare kind of combination.
I went
back and looked historically at outside linebackers that in the data that they tracked. I had to go all the way back to 2014. Connor Barwin was the last outside linebacker to have that same combination. And I was really curious about it because it's so rare. I went back. 2010 was a wild season. James Harrison and Lamar Woodley both had over, I think, 400 pass rush snaps and over 200 coverage snaps for the Pittsburgh Steelers that year.
Zone blitz.
Yeah, it was a wild for both of them to have that. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, that'd be like Martindale running the Steelers defense back then. He was just zone blitzing off either side on a kind of an alternating basis. Harrison in particular, not a great coverage player, but that would be a good way to run that defense if you had it. Bowser, you know, dropping roughly 40% of the time into coverage. It might have even been higher the year before. I'm not sure. Did you happen to look at that to see what?
I don't think he had more snaps in coverage, but he might have had a higher percentage of snaps in coverage last year.
Okay.
Just because there was more of a rotation of the edge rushers when we had with Judon and with Ngakoue both taking more of the pass rush snaps. And then Bowser had a few, but he was also one of the primary coverage guys for the Ravens last year, as he was again this year as well.
So three interceptions last year. Obviously, didn't have any this year, but still, I think would have to be rated as one of the best, or if not the best, coverage outside linebacker in the NFL. I'm a little biased, but I'd certainly say he's it. In terms of the Ravens' coverage linebackers, he's the best, regardless of inside or outside.
Definitely.
So you know he gives you a lot there, and they used him differently this year. They used him a little bit off ball in some of the situations. And obviously with the big three outside linebackers on the field, they wanted to not necessarily have any of them set up on the inside. And one way you can do that, they did the year before with Judon, is to have one of your players standing up. Now, Pernell McPhee, no problem lining up on the inside. You know, Ferguson, I think he's okay doing it too. But Jahad Ward was, but with Bowser, I think it really is not the greatest match for his skills to be there. So you want to use his quickness. That's okay. Standing off ball is fine. He can give you a lot of value in that short middle zone, particularly if he's not directly in that A-gap to start the play. And then he can also give you value if you want to stunt. And he's a good over guy. I would not say he's the ideal under guy, but the Ravens have lots of good under guys on this
team. Yeah, and I think Bowser was used more so in like a traditional off-the-ball linebacker role, not necessarily like lining up in a gap, but actually, you know, 4 to 5 yards off the line of scrimmage, as you know, and some like 4-3 kind of looks or that the Ravens had at times this year. And maybe it's more like a 4-2-5 nickel package, but he was definitely used a little bit more, I think, differently than any other Ravens edge player that we've seen recently. You know, Judon was kind of like a jack of all trades. He had kind of the ability to move in and out and kind of line up in different roles, I think, in this defense. That's not exactly what Bowser did. Maybe a little bit, but more so kind of in defined roles, I think, for Bowser. And I think for the most part, it worked well and it took advantage of his skill set.
Right. There was more early down slippage off the line of scrimmage, too. So if you have Campbell in there, and honestly, they trusted Broderick Washington with some of this, too, you know, holding the outside shoulder of the tackle. On the strong side, I mean, they would drop off Bowser from the line of scrimmage to confuse, probably to show a slightly different look so that the coordinator has something to think about. But anyway, I thought that was, you know, it was good variation of play. It didn't always work out for the best, but You know, he's a hell of a player. Yeah. And the injury in week 18, absolutely, it was the capper on a terrible season of injuries because it affects 22, we think. And it's just they're not coming with a fresh slate anymore. Now they're coming with one of their best players, and they probably won't have him to start the season.
Yeah, it's really devastating. And like you said, just that, of course, you know, this season couldn't end in a worse way. But losing one of your best defensive players, but could potentially be, you know, an injury that affects the next year. Definitely, you know, we've seen some players bounce back. You know, I think Terrell Suggs had an Achilles, and he was able to come back in a pretty short period of time afterwards. You know, this year Cam Akers went out shortly before the season, and he's playing in the playoffs. So it really depends on the player's kind of training regimen. The actual injury probably has some effect on it, how quickly their bodies heal. Not everybody's the same. Some people can come back faster than others. We have to hope that, you know, Bowser, he basically had surgery pretty much soon as the season was over. So
it has occurred then, because
it happened last week.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it happened.
Great.
So he's going to be, you know, having the entire offseason to heal up, hopefully, you know, able to have somewhat of a, I mean, not a normal training regimen, but something that at least can stay in like the football shape, and then get back at it as soon as possible. And because the Ravens are going to need him, I think, if they're going to have the same semblance of the defense that they've been using over the past couple of years, it's going to be tough without him out there.
Right. You'd really love to have within Wink's defense two guys who can drop. And Bowser is one of the droppiest of drops. He's as good as anybody at doing it. And then you've got other choices. Then maybe you get away into it. Maybe you get Hayes, but you're not completely depending on them to be the guy. And I think Hayes's role would be tremendously reduced to maybe only a rotational player with Bowser. And Bowser will probably play a lower percentage of snaps this next year, even if he would start the season. I think he'd play a lower percentage of snaps just because they try and be pitch counting him up to a higher level.
Yeah, I definitely think that would make sense. And you know, a lot will depend on what players the Ravens can bring back. Obviously, we've talked about Houston. Pernell McPhee, we haven't spent too much time on. He was in and out of the lineup this year on the IR. Like I said, didn't have the same impact that he had in years past. I think, you know, 2 years ago, he was playing really well and then got hurt last year. Also played really well, was healthy throughout the entire season. Had a pretty impactful player for the Ravens defense. And then this year, he just didn't have that same role, the same impact. So, I mean, maybe you can offer him that 1 year contract, veteran minimum, and see if he still has anything left. I wouldn't have him as someone that I would count on necessarily, though.
Yeah, but he's excellent depth, or he could be excellent depth. Let's put it that way. He only played in 10 games this year, which is not that great. But he's a guy who, if you bring him back, you probably can play the roster game to slip somebody onto the roster, then onto IR on the roster, so that it doesn't have a season-ending IR, and then you can bring him back. So, you know, the Ravens are very adept at doing that. And depending on what the rules are for this next year, I don't know if they're continuing on with a similar rule set where you might really want to have five guys who are in that class. McPhee's not someone another team is going to yank out from under the Ravens and take from you. So that's why players like Levine and Tomlinson and McPhee had some incremental value to the Ravens, and a team that really knows how to play the roster games on the margin.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think there's definitely going to be an open door if he wants to come back, and it'll be a similar like situation. And I don't know if they're going to want to have him block the potential draft pick. Like if they pick somebody up, I don't think they're going to be spending big money in free agency. I think like bringing back Justin Houston would probably be the max that they would probably do at the position. And then you really just have to look at the draft and see what they can do in that situation.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure they'll take an outside linebacker at some point in this draft. I don't anticipate it has to be a number one, although a lot of people think pass rusher is the top. I'd put offensive tackle and cornerback ahead of it for sure. Cornerback, just the age situation is very bad. Obviously, at outside linebacker, the real problem is the current injuries as opposed to the quality, at least of the two most important starters. Let's go into Odafe Oweh, because we just touched on him briefly. Coming out of Penn State, lots of questions about productivity. I think we had those answered fairly early. I think, you know, you mentioned that he's a playmaker. I think we saw some of that, particularly in the Kansas City game. Lots to love. My main fear about how they handle him is that they ask him to do too much too soon. I'd rather he become a more refined pass rusher in year two, where that's really the thing they focus on.
Yeah, I think that's where the upside is, right? Like, I mean, you have someone like that with that type of body, that type of athleticism, speed off the edge. We've seen him use that incredibly well in some of the reps he was able to get as a rookie. If he can continue to develop, some of the use of the hands, the ability to bend around the edge, you know, maybe work on his get off a little bit more, because, you know, he has that raw like speed, but can he time up the snap a little bit better, you know, figure out, you know, ways to kind of really put the offensive tackle in as much of a bind as he possibly can. I think that's where he should be focusing on, especially early in his career. That's where you're going to get the most value out of him as, you know, as a pass rusher. So I think that's definitely the areas to focus on.
The really interesting point you just made there about, you know, the get off and whatnot. And great pass rushers have a fair number of offside calls in a typical season, you know, 4, 5, 6 calls sometimes for really top end pass rushers. And it's just kind of a cost of doing business, but it does two things for you. Number one, if you time it up, you know, it very often will lead to a hit or a sack on that play. At the very least, it'll be a very big disadvantage pressure that usually results in an incomplete pass or worse. But number two is that offensive tackle may overset. And so that's an ancillary benefit of that. Yeah, they can false start, but even if they just overset, that's pretty bad. And you know, you can set them up for an inside move by the fact that you're just taking chances off the snap and occasionally risking being offsides on a play. So outside linebackers go offside, edge rushers go offside, I don't worry about it too much. I think it's just a, you know, kind of a cost of doing.
Yeah, it's definitely going to happen at times. I mean, if it is happening, you know, multiple times a game, like it can be a problem. Like we saw Randy Gregory get, you know, maybe kill the Dallas Cowboys when he jumps off 3 times in a single game. Like that's probably too much. But if it happens, you know, a couple times over the course of the season, that's not something I'm going to have as a significant concern. So, you know, I think that physically the sky's the limit for him, technically, and what he can learn in terms of like kind of the counter moves. And you mentioned, you know, the ability to kind of attack the outside and then come back inside. Can he develop like a spin move? You know, that can be devastating for pass rushers who have the right ability to really threaten the edge with their speed and then come back inside. You know, there's not a lot of offensive tackles that are going to be able to match him from a pure speed standpoint. So if he can learn those counters, it can be a real weapon for the Ravens.
Yeah, this was my big talking point before his first year, was that as soon as he learns to counter, he's a better athlete than any tackle in the entire league. We can just start with there. There's no offensive tackle who can match any component. Even from a length perspective, there's hardly any offensive tackles that can match him. And that's the most likely angle they can beat him on. They're never going to beat his feet. They're never going to beat, you know, what he can bring in terms of bend or speed or any of that. So part of his, you know, deal has to be understanding how you set that guy up. And you know, your opponent is not particularly talented. How do you take advantage of that fact? And yeah, you use your length, get to that outside shoulder first, you spin back inside, or you have the Euro step is just a very simple way that a lot of defensive end edge rushers are using now to just sell an outside or inside move and go the other direction. It's just, there's a lot of things that he has available to himself, but the one thing he can depend on, because he's such an athlete, is that every offensive tackle, the lesser athlete, is going to overreact to his first move. And I think that goes a little bit with the oversetting comment, is that if you get that as well, then you know you really got the guy. And you just got to you got to come up with second move deals. They're buying whatever you're selling on the first move.
Yep, and it's probably just the progress of a pass rusher, especially one who was a little bit more on the raw side, like OA was coming out of college. Mm-hmm. Learning that type of nuance to the position is something that will really take his game to the next level. And oftentimes there is that sophomore year jump. We've seen that a lot of times in the NFL. You know, players come in, they show some flashes in their first year. Second year, they get their legs under them. They get in the NFL weight room training program, maybe, you know, put on 5-10 pounds, and then work on their craft, work on the skills that will put them over the top. And I'm hoping that, you know, Owe can be someone who will take to that type of training, take to that type of coaching that's given to him, and really, you know, become that elite level player that we could definitely use in this defense.
Yeah, I see more about his play style and maybe his personality and what we've seen so far, his on-field demeanor, that would tell me he's more likely to be a guy that will go for position-specific training as opposed to some other players on the Ravens who really would value their time off more. And I'm not sure I'm sure OA has lots of other things to do with his time that are very positive. But I have a feeling he's going to be less likely to waste that time based on the amount of growth we've seen during this first year alone.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times this is in the player's hands. They have this offseason. This is their personal time. This is their time to relax, to do whatever their goals are. And some players are incredibly driven and they want to like get back right into the lab and work on honing their craft. And, you know, some players, they, you know, get in the film room, things like that. Some players, they might not spend as much time. They might, you know, go hang out on the beach for a few weeks, do whatever. And you know, I'm not going to be here and judge them for that. That's their life. That's, you know, it's, I think everybody deserves like some time off. But if you're going to really try to be the best of the best, you have to have those, you know, goals in mind and really figure out how am I going to get better and improve every day in the off season just as much you are in the regular season.
Right. And I think you need to not be self-congratulatory is what I would say about this. I would agree. Everybody needs some time off, but don't say, oh, I worked out, so it's okay to do this. It's kind of like an overweight person saying, oh, I didn't eat anything yesterday, so it's okay for me to have this gigantic frozen yogurt today, or, you know, whatever it might be. That's the bad choice. It's something where there's a certain number of players on the Ravens. Patrick Queen comes to mind immediately. I don't want to see workout videos from him this offseason. I want to see positional craft work. Okay. It's not what he needs is not workout. We already know he's a good athlete. Okay. He needs to figure out how to play frickin' linebacker. And there's about four aspects of it, which he's doing at a very poor level and he needs to get better at. Owe, you know, he doesn't have that far to go, but Lamar Jackson, you know, took that big jump between year one and year two by taking the time. And hopefully there's enough examples of people on the team to say, hey, you know, this really is time well spent. It's going to define my life in any number of ways, what I can do during these next two seasons, you know, before they decide on my fifth year option. You know, and that's a huge milestone. Then after year four, it comes another huge milestone in terms of whether he's playing for a contract in year five or whether he's already in free agency and it needs a big year in year four to power up. But I mean, these milestones are coming quickly. You know, Adafi Owe does not have a lot of time until those occur. So in the 1,000 or so days that he has before those come up, make the most of every damn one. You know, and become the best football player you can become.
Yeah, and this is where having someone like Justin Houston, you know, matters. Even though he's a free agent, you know, they definitely clearly had a relationship on the field, off the field. Mm-hmm. You know, having someone that you know, can take away under his wing and show him how to be a professional, show him how to watch film, show him how to learn like the details of the craft. I think that could potentially be something that's really impactful on his career moving forward. So I'm hoping that they do have a relationship in this off season, even if just like staying in touch and like kind of giving some like, you know, veteran like tips as to how to like just keep the progress going, figure out ways to improve on a regular basis. And that's really what we can just hope that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I couldn't pick a player to be a better mentor for him. So that would definitely be a positive as I'd see it. Jalen Ferguson, a guy who didn't get a lot of playing time this year. We need to hit on him anyway, about 125 snaps as I've got it. That doesn't include penalties, of course. Not what you would want from a player at this point. Obviously, he's entering his fourth season. He'll go into camp immediately on the bubble in terms of even making the team. You know, I think that's we'd have to agree. I mean, just for people out there who maybe haven't heard me explain this before, every player signs a 4-year contract when they're drafted. And that is a 4-year, excluding first round picks now for a moment, because they have that 5th year option. But it's a 4-year declining value option. So it's kind of like having kinetic and potential energy. You know, the higher up in the air you are, the more potential energy you have. But you may have less kinetic energy if you're a rifle shot going up into the air. This is a case where a player's kinetic energy is very low. He doesn't have a lot of, you know, am I getting this wrong? Is kinetic and potential? Potential energy is the one where that's I have it wrong. This is great explanation by me. But anyway, declining option value in the fourth year. that's terrible. He really needs to come and have a good camp just to make the team. And then, he's making some money. I don't have his exact salary in front of me, but if he's making a couple of million, like some of the other guys who are here, he's definitely in substantial.
I don't think he got the performance boost to be over to the, was it the third round tender or the second round tender? I think he's still going to be playing at like the 1 million range, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, you're correct. So his base salary for 2022 is 965,000 with a prorated bonus of 225 they can't get rid of. So it's only 965. So some of the guys like Powers are playing for 2.5 million this year. And they, because of that, they're at risk of being cut. Or they could negotiate down and come to a different agreement with the team.
Yeah, I think for that reason, Ferguson probably is on the roster, depending on who comes back and draft, obviously, because he's not going to be that expensive. But this year I thought was the year that he really had to show it. He didn't, so maybe I'm wrong about that. I think that he just doesn't really have that type of high-end athleticism that's really required at the position in today's NFL. There's a reason why he wasn't on the field very often. I thought, like some players, he will show a flash now and then. In the Rams game, he had an opportunity to play a lot of snaps, and he had, I think, 3 or 4 plays where I thought, that's the player you drafted. You hope for that type of ability. He had a couple of nice plays against the run. I think he had a couple of nice, bull rushes. But he's never really developed as a pass rusher. He kind of has that one kind of, like, basically, he can bull rush, and he has length, but he doesn't have a lot of power. He doesn't have speed around the edge. He doesn't have bend. I think he's just limited in that role, and he just hasn't done those things that we're talking about with Owe to try and get better. At least I haven't seen that improvement out of him.
No, I haven't either. And honestly, even if you're comparing bull rushes for those two players, Owe can set up a bull rush that will get the tackle disadvantaged on the play before it even begins, whereas Ferguson doesn't really have that ability. So he's got a straight out leverage and out strength that opponent, which he can do, but it's not going to be something he can win at every time. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say I do think he can make the roster, but it's really going to be dependent on circumstances around him. It's not going to necessarily be because he is someone that the Ravens need to be out there. It's more going to be like, we have a spot, we could use the depth at this position, and it's going to depend on the availability of other players, most likely.
Well, if the other option is a 32-year-old, $1 million pass rusher who's not named Justin Houston, it's some guy who you're really taking a chance on, and he had 3 sacks last year, and he maybe had 10 3 years ago kind of thing. And there's a lot of guys who kind of meet that description out there, and not exactly, but kind of. I'm not that excited about going after a player like that. I'd rather have Ferguson play out his final year, see if he can break out in some small way, possibly provide value in the comp formula, but also just being a younger player, he's got more upside than an older player. So, you got to figure he's probably going in the right direction. He doesn't provide the Ravens anything in terms of dropping to coverage. At least he doesn't as of now. So I don't think he's part of a two-headed monster on either end of the line of scrimmage that you give defensive coordinators nightmares on third down about who's actually rushing. So,
One other component I would say, he is bigger than the rest of the other Ravens outside linebackers. I think he's like 6'5", like 270, 275, something like that. In the past, we've seen Wink utilize those guys as kind of like the interior pass rusher, or players in his mold, at least in size. We mentioned Jihad Ward. He played a lot of snaps inside as kind of like a pass rushing defensive tackle last year. That hasn't something that Ferguson has been really asked to do very much, and he hasn't really, if he's done it at all, it hasn't been effective. Maybe he can bulk up a little bit and try to have some of a role like that this year, because I don't think the Ravens had that on their roster this year, frankly. I mean, McPhee maybe used a little bit like that, but they really didn't have that guy. We've seen it in the past with McPhee, with Zadarius Smith, with Jihad Ward. That was something that the Ravens didn't have, and maybe they missed it a little bit, I think, in this season, because they didn't really get much of an interior pass rush outside of Campbell.
Yeah, they used actually Bowser on the inside a fair amount, and I didn't really like that, but it is what it was. They used Oe some on the inside, and he was often stunting when he did that. But Houston really loves to play wide, so they really didn't use him on the inside. He was the one guy that kind of let out of that responsibility. But I agree with you. I mean, the Ravens don't have an obvious guy for that. McPhee was one guy they had that did it. Ferguson was another guy who did it a fair amount. In 2019, you know, he and Ward kind of alternated games there for a while of who was active, and he was getting a lot of interior pass rush then, particularly when the Ravens were playing a lot of the four outside linebacker package. I think he still could have a role. I think it actually probably plays to his favor that he doesn't have a salary that's through the roof that'll get him cut, although he could just agree to, you know, play for less. But the Ravens, there's good incentives on both sides for him to play this year, but nonetheless, he'll go into camp. If there's somebody better and the Ravens have five guys better than Jalen Ferguson, I don't think he'll be on the roster.
I agree with that.
All right. Let's see. Who do we not talk about? Do we get everybody here? I'm trying to think if we've missed anybody. Did we talk about Pernell McPhee really?
I mean, briefly, he was injured. Okay. He didn't have a great season. I don't know if he had a sack. I think age might be catching up with him. He didn't look like he had the same type of ability to get after the quarterback as we've seen, even as recently as last year. He just didn't have very many pressures at all that I counted.
Yeah, one sack in the opener against the Raiders, but you're right, he didn't have a lot of pressure the whole year, and it's unfortunate. He may be at the end of the line. I think he's another guy though on the margin of the roster that you can keep around and bring back if you need him. So he may be a guy you can even stick on the practice squad and you can have a wink wink deal with him, but you may also be able to just stick him on the practice squad and 3 weeks later bring him back. If your Ravens have so many of these guys right now, it's going to be a question of who they really want to protect, you know, in next year, assuming they have the normal amount of camp injuries. But I hate to even say that, the normal amount of camp injuries, but Tomlinson is around. They've got Josh Oliver. I mean, who's all over Josh Oliver that they just got to have him? You know, he's the kind of guy who's on that margin too. So they've got guys and Josh Bynes, frankly, you know, as much as he's helped the Ravens defense, I don't think people are knocking down his door to bring him in to sign him away from the Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been getting those contracts. Clearly he was available to be picked up this year. He was available to be picked up when the Ravens got him a couple of years ago. He did sign that 1 year deal with Cincinnati, but it's clearly not someone who teams are knocking down the door to bring in for a multi-year contract, anything like that.
Right. Right. I'm kind of excited, by the way, to have Josh Bynes back. Under any circumstances, I think he'd really help the Ravens. Okay, outstanding stuff. We'll really appreciate having you on as always, Gabe. Great to talk about this in terms of what the Ravens defense might look like in 2022. That big hole where Bowser was supposed to be, and hopefully the Ravens get by that. Tell folks again where they can touch base with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie. Feel free to reach out to me or just, comment on a post I make. Love to have a chat.
All right. Outstanding. Folks out there, if you want to do a film study short this offseason, hit me up with that. DMs are open. Here's the big one, though, and we'll be recording these over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks, is a new series called Fixing the Ravens. So if you want to do a particular show on what the Ravens need to do the team. We're not going to do a lot of overlap on this, so I want to make sure your topic is narrow and that you're not completely overlapping with people who otherwise have signed up for the topic. Again, hit me up with DM on Twitter. Tell me what you think is an important fix for the Ravens. And it doesn't even have to be the number one fix. It just has to be a fix that you think is important for the Ravens to make for 2022. Gabe, thanks again for being on.
Thanks, Ken. I always love coming on your show, and I hope to come back again sometime shortly.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.